Welcome to the First Intuition podcast. On this episode, we look at the world of recruitment and how it has come through the pandemic with an eye to the future developments in sourcing and starting a new role. As always, we recorded the episode in front of a live Zoom audience, and if you'd like to join a future session, you can register in the show notes. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the First Intuition podcast. My name is Ben Bullman, and I am joined again this evening by my good friend, colleague, fellow tutor director, Dave Malthouse. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Ben. And how are you this week?
Really, really good. This week has been phenomenally hot. I don't mind the heat. I don't mind the sunshine. I am loving it. If it could stay like this until September, I would be a very happy bunny. But I appreciate the heat isn't for everybody. I'm also enjoying the football. We have got a feast of football on the telly at the moment, much to my wife's disgust on some evenings where I try to convince her it's just the same match that's rolling over and over and over. And actually, I've got away with watching two, if not maybe three matches in a day. But I am loving it. And after we finish recording tonight, I'm actually going to watch a game of football. My eldest daughter is playing her final game of the season this evening in this really, really hot weather. They've had a real fixture congestion because of COVID. So the season's extended much beyond anything it would have normally done. And we've got the last game of her season this evening. So I am all football mad in this house at the moment.
Yeah, we've got, I'm obviously watching as much of the football as I can possibly get away with. I love that idea of pretending it's just one day-long game that begins at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and doesn't finish till about 10 o'clock in the evening. I think they probably, I'm fairly confident my wife would spot the fact they're wearing different kits and things like that though. So, but you know, it is worth a go. Our family, it's about cricket at the moment. My son's out playing cricket today. It's the third game his team have played, I think, in the last 4 days. So they've just got crazy numbers of fixtures at the moment. So, yeah, lots of sport going on. On a football note, though, next week we're going to have a football special, Ben, because we've got a very special guest who knows everything that there is possible to know about the finances of football. So that'll be a really exciting episode, really tie up with Euro. So if anyone's got any questions about football finance, money in football, how to work as an accountant in football, definitely worth coming along next time.
That sounds fantastic. I can't wait. But this evening, we've got an equally good guest. I am delighted to welcome Catherine Wallace. Catherine is head of operations at the One Group, consultants across wider East Anglia. Good evening, Catherine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. I'm worried that I might not be able to keep up with the football chat, not being particularly into it myself, and probably would have fallen for the day-long football game. Yeah, try to avoid it as much as possible. But very well, thank you, and quite warm.
Don't panic. We will leave the football for next week. It's obviously going to be the theme. Maybe if you download next week's podcast, you'll get a bit more of a taster of what football is all about, particularly from the financial side. But I'm happy to chat holidays and camper vans because you're a fellow camper van owner now, aren't you?
So we were exactly. Yeah, we had our maiden voyage in our camper van at the weekend, and you know, it couldn't have been better weather for it. So yeah, we're fair weather campers at the moment, but you know, I'm sure we'll be tested when it gets into the winter and see whether it's gently rusting on the drive or whether we're, you know, prepared to go out in all conditions and sit on the beach in the rain. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, with the amount of stress and, you know, kind of turmoil that's gone on, just to wake up on the shoreline and realise what life's all about is money very well spent.
Lots of staycation stories to come, I am sure. Yeah. And just to all the listeners, full sympathy, holidays this year are going to be different. Good luck if you're trying to book things, you're trying to get in places. I know that can be very stressful as well. Shall we do our introduction more formally then, Catherine? So what we normally do when we get a guest on the podcast is ask them to give a bit of a backstory. Dave usually says, if this was your superhero Marvel film, how you've got to the position you are today, what would be the montage they would roll with? So how have you got to head of operations at the One Group?
Probably a bit of luck, a bit of judgment, you know, and a bit of timing thrown in. So, I mean, ironically, I did a degree at Cardiff University in language and communication, which at the time was just something to fill a few years whilst I worked out what I wanted to do, but actually has probably proved to be the most useful bit of study that I could have done for all the sort of communicating and, you know, trying to understand what people are looking for and, you know, navigating clients and candidates and careers. So actually a very well chosen degree in hindsight. But yeah, then, nobody chooses to go into recruitment. You never meet any student, any young person who says, I want to be a recruitment consultant, you know, even though it's actually, you know, a very popular role these days. I don't think it's really hit the list of secondary schools or sixth forms where people, you know, include it on their list of HR, business, finance, engineering, you know, construction, recruitment consulting is not up there. I think most of us fall into it because we know somebody who does it, or you go and register with an agent and you think, actually, that looks quite good fun. I reckon I could do that, which is exactly what happened for me. So, yeah, I went into a high street to find out what I could do and thought, actually, that looks quite good. I'll have a go at that. But applied for the Hays Accountancy Personnel, the huge Hays Personnel group. They have a good graduate scheme and started off in central London. So right in the thick of it, actually recruiting for central government, which was fascinating. This was sort of showing my age here, about 22 years ago, just after graduating. And the public sector at that point was just moving from, you know, pure kind of basic accounting into what they called their RAB accounting, their resource accounting and budgeting, where they were actually doing a little bit more in terms of, you know, sort of more commercial sort of viewpoint on their finances. So it was a really interesting time to get into it, and actually quite a lucrative time to get into it, because they were trying to take as many commercial accountants as they possibly could. You know, prior to that, it was all trying to find a public sector accountant, a CIPFA qualified accountant, which is really hard work. But they were saying, no, we don't want that. We've got loads of those. We want commercial accountants. So as many Antipodeans as were coming across on their 2-year visas, we were placing them into the central government bodies, and they were providing their commercial expertise. So got to do some great client meetings around the prison and the highways agency and the treasury and the House of Commons, and yeah, time of my life. Moved on from that, life got a bit sensible, got married, wanted to have kids, didn't want to live in central London. I was working just above Topshop on Oxford Street, so obviously not saving any money, spending it as I went. And thought, you know, there probably is a more sensible way to live. So, transferred to Cambridge and moved my career through from transferring with Hays and then working for some boutique agencies, had my own business for a while, landed at the One Group, people that I knew, culture that I knew was great. Spent many happy years there recruiting in the finance world, working with yourself, Ben, and Gareth, and putting on events, rounders events, pub quizzes, and generally engaging with the finance community and understanding all things finance in and around Cambridge, which I loved. Moved into management. As other managers left, I kind of acquired other divisions. The marketing manager left, and I was like, well, you know, how hard can marketing be? You know, I'm sure I can get my head around that. So picked up that division on a short-term basis, and fast forward several years. I'm now head of operations and looking after all the divisions. So we've got engineering, IT, HR, marketing, finance, sales, financial services. I've got my arms around all of them and ensuring that everyone's happy, motivated, performing well, giving great service and generally loving their work. So yeah, that was 20 years in about 2 minutes. Felt longer than that during the time, a lot longer.
I can imagine, but it's gone in a blur when you...
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. And 3 kids somewhere along that point, probably should have mentioned them, should have given them a shout out, but anyway, they happened too. So yeah, managed to fit it all in and actually still love it. So I feel very kind of grateful and lucky to have, you know, accidentally fallen into a job that I love, but I would never work within another division. I mean, I look after all of them, but finance is always my favourite. And I hope nobody from the One Group's actually listening to this podcast, because obviously I pretend that they're all my favourites, but finance is where my heart is. You know, that's where the interesting stuff happens.
So do you still have much day-to-day connection with candidates, or is it more on the employer side, or is it a bit of both that you're involved in?
A little bit of both. I definitely still keep my network going. I mean, you never know when your run of luck or run of skill will come to an end and you have to get back on the tools. So I try to keep my network going. I do quite a lot of work with the FD Centre and then providing consultancy across SMEs around the area. So that's a really good sort of link point for us. So I enjoy speaking to them about the kind of work that their clients are doing. That's been really interesting over the last year or so, getting sort of more insight into how their clients are getting on. Not so much with candidates, other than with things like webinars and seminars that we're hoping to start running actually in physical format again. I mean, the whole point of doing the role is to understand, you know, what people are wanting out of their careers, what they're, you know, how they're getting on, how they want to prosper. So, you know, I never want to get too far away from that. But obviously, I have lots of other things to do, which take up most of my time around looking after the team that I've got. I've got 5 or 6 managers that report to me and they have teams under them. So, you know, trying to stay connected and not be one of those leaders that hasn't got a clue what's going on and just thinks they know it all and actually they really don't know anything. So, yeah, trying to keep my hand in, but also juggle all the balls, keep all the plates spinning. But that's how it is for most kind of people in leadership roles, isn't it? Trying to stay real whilst managing the demands of the strategic side of things as well.
I think so. Something that certainly resonates with me, Dave, I guess you as well, that the balance between I've been down there on the teaching a lot, but now I'm in a management position, but still quite like to keep my hand in.
I don't think the team likes the fact that I try to keep my hand in, because what tends to happen is, you know, I'm milling around the finance team and they say, oh, I've got a really good job on for XYZ. You know, they're recruiting for a finance business partner. And I say, oh, I've got a great idea for that. And I mention some candidate from yesteryear that's probably retired. And they're like, oh, my God, you're so out of touch. You know, why are you even mentioning that person? You know, they retired 4 years ago. And I think, oh, God, yeah, I really need to stick to my own day job. But, you know, continually trying to help in probably a fairly irrelevant way. But I can't say I'm that up to that au fait with all the people that are really looking for work now. I'll definitely leave that to the team. They're the ones that know what's really going on. But I like to pretend that I've still got a bit of a clue.
Sounds very much like me and Dave. It really, really does. You mentioned getting back to face-to-face. I suppose let's get it over and done with. We can't ignore the last 16-odd months of pandemic. What have you seen in your world of recruitment? What's been the impact on your clients?
Well, I mean, it's been, you know, it's a cliche and I hate saying this, but it has been a real journey, you know, from the original lockdown when, you know, I think we were worrying about what to do with our own business and our own consultants and also trying to second guess what our clients were doing. Because, of course, we need to try and replicate our clients' manoeuvres, because we're only going to be, you know, we're always sort of second in line, aren't we? If our clients recruit, then we're into action. And if they don't recruit, then we've got nothing to do. So, you know, we're trying to sort of figure out what was going on. And certainly, you know, the market is busy now. You know, the market is really busy. So I hope that reassures all your students and people that are on this call and listening to this later, that, you know, the market has really picked up. And they talked about that bounce back, which, you know, there was a time when we thought, God, is that really going to happen? And we obviously, of course, hoped that it really did. And we are seeing that now. But, you know, rewind back to last March, you know, we scaled down and thank God for furlough. You know, we used that and had sort of a core team of 5 or 6 people representing each, you know, representing all of our divisions that were really just sort of managing what would have been a team of 6 or 7 consultants. We had one person that was managing everything. So that just goes to show that the scale down that happened immediately, you know, big impact on temporary recruitment, because nobody was hiring temps to, you know, to take people because of the sort of induction. And there's just so much caution. And for us as recruiters, clients were difficult to get hold of. There was that whole, how do you get hold of anybody when everyone's working from home? You know, people weren't that available. So it's difficult to really get a handle on what was going on. So definitely went very quiet for a long time. And then, you know, people started to emerge and we got a team of our best sort of our most networked consultants to, you know, start reaching out to their networks and their contacts to find out what was going on. And that was sort of around July time when we started to feel that actually maybe people are getting braver, perhaps, you know, this bounce back that they talk about could happen sooner rather than later. And, you know, we got a team of people sort of out in the market trying to get a feel for what was going on. And the signs were really good. And I have to say, you know, in terms of sectors, the manufacturing and FMC FMCG sector was going crazy. They couldn't get enough people. Obviously, the supermarkets running out of stuff and trying to get the keep the world, you know, sort of, you know, the supermarkets full and the shelves stacked. Not that we kind of hire at that kind of level, but, you know, in terms of the background of these logistics and FMCG businesses, our team that looks after that kind of work were really flat out. So some sectors did so well out of it. And we've even got some smaller clients that were really agile in the way that they managed to maneuver their services online and you know, really prospered because of how quickly they were able to, you know, change the way that they operated. And some companies of, you know, that were, you know, doing delivery services for food were able to deliver to the sort of households as opposed to just the businesses that they used to deliver to. So, you know, real agility, which was, you know, just really kind of heartwarming to see how smaller companies were able to you know, really kind of make the most of a really terrible situation. So lots of lovely stuff to see going on in terms of positivity. As I say, very hard to get hold of people and really get a handle on what was going on. But certainly in the last probably 2 months, we've seen a massive ramp up in job activity. And actually things have, you know, so many you know, businesses now wanting to get back to normal, get their plans back on track, probably make up for lost time to an extent as well. So it's a really a candidate driven market at the moment, which you'd think is strange. I mean, we all expected that the market would be flooded with people that had been made redundant, you know, and and certainly we are getting a lot of applications. But in terms of the real quality of suitable candidates at the right level that are going forward for these positions, you know, they're in demand. There's a lot of jobs, there's a lot of choice for the really skilled people. I mean, for every role, we probably get, you know, 100 applicants, many of which aren't suitable or are too senior or have been made redundant and are really trying to, you know, kind of use every skill they've got to try and get back into work. And, you know, we try and help those people and offer as much as we can. But realistically, for clients wanting to carry on with their business plans and they need the right person in that's going to stay with them for the right period of time, then getting that right person is quite a challenge. Companies are working quite hard to hang on to their people. So lots of counter offers and people trying to juggle this desire for a more flexible way of working. You know, companies that are saying, right, we're back in the office, we want to get back to normal, and their teams and the people that they're wanting to employ are saying, well, hang on a minute, what about this working from home business? You know, we like it, we want to stick with it. So, you know, a little bit of navigation around how is this actually going to work for us now? But the simple answer is we've bounced back. You know, it's busy, it's a great time to look for a new role in finance. And that's just not just me trying to kind of, you know, put a positive spin on the recruitment agency world. You know, genuinely, we are short of good people. So, yeah, interesting times.
And Catherine, is that a trend that's true across kind of the whole of the UK, or is that East Anglia in isolation? So I think that Ben and I, we're both based in East Anglia, and I always feel that we seem to be a little bit insulated from, you know, real downturns in East Anglia, because we've got a lot of those kind of like knowledge-based businesses that aren't so impacted when people start buying stuff. So yeah. Is it the same picture across the UK, or is it?
Difficult for me to answer that one, because we are, you know, a localized regional business. You know, one of our USPs is that we're very well networked across our three offices, which is Northampton, Peterborough and Cambridge. So, you know, we really know what's going on in those locations. And as we said in our chat beforehand, Northampton doing very well out of their logistics businesses. There's a heavy sort of concentration of logistics businesses there, and the SME businesses are getting back up to speed. Cambridge, so much agility and innovation and lots of software and services and working from home anyway, that a lot of it has been fairly natural for them and our Peterborough team. There is quite a lot of national work going on within the engineering and the technical team. But in terms of finance and sort of keeping it specific for the audience here, you know, I can't really comment on what's happening in the sort of finance world in London. I mean, I can say that our financial services team, who are very concentrated in London in terms of sort of city banking, etc., they're rushed off their feet. But that's a bit of a slightly, you know, it's a slightly different sort of market to the kind of sort of roles that your students might be thinking about getting in the future. So it's a difficult one for me to answer, really. But I mean, the whole country has opened up because, of course, so many people are looking for remote working now that actually, does it even matter where you live? You know,
I have heard that. I've worked with fans obviously across Essex, and they are, you know, I spoke to one person that recruited two people, and neither of them are in the region. I think the closest that either of them were was Northampton, which is just bizarre that you think that, right, so you're growing your team, but you're growing it with someone that is now, you know, 100 or so miles away from where your office is, but you're never expecting to go into work. So it just really shows how some businesses have adapted.
If we're talking about adaption, I'd be really interested, Catherine, to know what sort of adaptions you guys have had to make during the pandemic and what you think is actually going to come out of it by way of presumably technology to select candidates, to interview candidates even. I guess you've had a period where they haven't been going for a face-to-face interview.
I appear to have muted myself by hands free then. The biggest innovation is absolutely, you know, remote interviewing. We didn't even use Skype before, when Skype was a thing. You know, we just met everybody, you know, or we talked on the phone, and now suddenly, you know, Teams, Zoom, etc. It's massive for everyone. But I don't know, any of you that spend much time on LinkedIn will probably have seen the absolute emergence of Odro, which is a similar to Hinterview and other, there's various packages, but I think Odro have done particularly well, which is a whole, it's basically a video platform for interviewing. And they've done very well because it was the only way to carry on any kind of hiring over the lockdown. I mean, the real big question is, will it continue afterwards? And I think they hope that they will have got enough of a foothold in order to offer value, you know, beyond lockdown when people are back to normal. But I don't know, I think there's such a desire for people to actually meet people now that we're seeing a real tail off. And people are just saying, look, I just want to meet somebody. I want them to come into the office. I want to show them around, you know. So whether this will be a sustainable innovation or not, I don't know. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we signed up and paid to have Odro as part of our sort of suite of offerings. And just the horror on people's faces, you know, you kind of think, oh, it's great, you know, we can do pre-screening, so clients don't even need to do first interviews anymore because they give us a selection of questions, and we interview the person via video with the questions that the clients asked, and then send that to the recruiting manager, and they're obviously able to watch it in their own time, which is great for them. There's no more diary management. They can forward it on to other stakeholders, so more people can be involved without it being a massive panel interview. So there's loads of benefits to it, but obviously as an interviewee, if you don't love being on video and you don't shine on video, which not everybody does, and it is a skill that you learn, then it actually puts you at quite a disadvantage, because that is your first interview, and actually you probably would have come across better in person, or maybe you wouldn't, but certainly there's benefits in terms of logistics and actually having to physically go somewhere. You know, you can do an interview online much easier in your lunch hour than you can actually attend an interview. But, you know, there's a lot of that going on, and that, and just the whole sort of remote onboarding. You know, there's people that have been working at a company for 6 months who haven't even been there. You know, it's crazy. So there's a lot of effort and work gone into the sort of remote comfort of making things work. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on whether you're a star of the screen or not, you know, remote online video interviewing is very much there. But we'll see. I mean, we've been using it ourselves to talk to clients, and we've got such a massive library of bloopers in the recordings that we've done that it will make a great Christmas party. We always like to kind of do some amusing videos at our Christmas do, and we're going to be spoiled for choice this year.
It is different. And I do feel, actually, for some people, it's an advantage. Maybe you're not quite as nervous on a Zoom screen as you would be going to a face-to-face interview in person. But on the flip side, exactly right, some people absolutely hate it and therefore at a massive disadvantage. So I guess it's finding ways to empower yourself. Any tips for people around that to get used to talking on a screen, if that's the way you're going to have to go to get your role?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, getting your background right. I mean, I'm sitting in my daughter's bedroom because I've got dogs and I just thought they're bound to bark. But, you know, you'd probably try and find a professional background rather than having lots of sausage dogs in the background. But, you know, kind of being comfortable and settled. But actually with the kind of pre-screen video recording that we've been doing, you can retake it numerous times. But I mean, you both run out of patience in the end and think, well, actually, we're just going to have to go with that, you know. But I mean, I suppose, you know, you have to sort of relax and practice. And we've all had plenty of practice of working on teams, haven't we now? So I think we've all kind of, you know, done the legwork in making it feel normal, which probably helps. You know, right at the beginning, it felt very alien, and now it doesn't so much. But, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? You kind of got to leave that space to let the other person talk. Otherwise, you end up kind of tripping over each other. And it's just difficult. There's no, you know, less non-verbal. I mean, you can't see what my hands are doing. I'm gesticulating wildly, but you can't see it because it's all going down here. So, you know, it's just hard to pick up the body language, isn't it? So, yeah, I think you've got to try and relax as much as possible, be as prepared as possible. And, you know, if something goes wrong, then be human. You know, we all live in houses where we have dogs or kids or postmen that want to ring the doorbell. We have had a few examples where people have actually left to go and answer the door. So, I mean, if the door goes, don't answer it, you know, kind of focus on the job in hand. But yeah, be human, you know.
I find eye contact one of the biggest challenges on a Zoom call or a Teams call, that I want to look people in the eye to acknowledge I'm listening, but actually the webcam's up there, but I need to look at you down here on the screen. And it really does look sometimes like, or am I looking like I'm distracted? Because I'm really, really not. I am listening to what you're saying, but it's just, I can't look in two places. Dave, have you done, I know you've done lots of client meetings and student events on Zoom, but have you done any interviewing more formally on a virtual platform?
Yeah, we have carried out interviews virtually. We actually have recruited 4 members of staff over the last year or so, and I have not physically met any of them. I've only met them through Zoom and kind of over the phone and things like that. I was actually joking to someone that I couldn't tell you of the 4 of them who is the tallest, who's the shortest, and in what I couldn't put them in height order for you. It's bizarre that I haven't met them. And I'm actually going to be in a position where I think one person that we have recruited before we get back and we can actually kind of be together in an office, I think will be on maternity leave. So we'll have had someone that it could be 2 years before I actually meet them to work out how tall they are. But one of the things that I would say in all those interviews is, as Catherine said, it's absolutely right in terms of prepare your environment so it looks professional, be professional throughout. If there are technical problems, they always happen, and they always happen at the time you don't want them to. So it's definitely going to happen in an interview. But just, you know, explain what's happening. Explain that, you know, I've just switched my computer on. It was working absolutely fine 10 minutes ago, and now the webcam's just gone blank. I really apologise. Do you mind if I reboot my computer and just see if I can get it working? And everyone has been through it. The only other thing that I would say is that, I know, Catherine, as you said, you know, you're in a room now where you're free from distractions. Absolutely right. There's nothing wrong with doing an interview if you are in your bedroom. Just don't make it look like you're lying on your bed. Or sitting in the bed where you just got up. Don't leave an unmade bed behind you, okay? Because that looks awful. And dress as you would for a normal interview. I know that there's been kind of almost a move towards looking a little bit more casual. People talk about working in their pajamas all day. I think that's fine, but I never would do it in an interview. I'd never do it on a client call. You know, I occasionally break out a tie still when I'm going into a client meeting, you know, because I feel that I need to have that formal look when I'm dealing with a certain type of client. If you're dealing with a corporate client and you know there's a certain expectation, I would always try and meet that expectation. So they're the things that I'm looking for is that, have you made an effort? You know, are you put in a professional environment? Do you look professional? Do you conduct yourself in a professional manner?
So just picking up on some of the student comments in the chat box, and one I can see there about maybe managers applying for entry-level finance roles. I guess that's from a bit of a change of career path. Finance, you just said it, Catherine, seems to have bounced back incredibly well, and some finance departments have been busy throughout. And I suppose people elsewhere are looking, thinking, actually, that looks like a very stable, strong career move for me. What have you seen as some of the main reasons people change roles or look for a role in finance particularly?
Well, I think that, you know, the big reason that people are switching roles at the moment is not so much about sector or skills, it's more about environment and flexibility. We've actually just got our latest salary guide and market insight document ready, which we always, you know, we use the consultant's expertise, knowledge and gut feel, but we also put a big survey out on LinkedIn and mail shot our entire database to get accurate data. And, you know, I mean, it's no surprise really that the biggest reasons that people are wanting to move roles is flexibility and working from home and getting that balance right, you know, it is on everybody's mind. And it's actually a bit of a minefield. You know, we've tried to do that in our working environment. We've offered people more flexibility. So we do have people working from home far more than they did before. But now we've got people that are in the office moaning that the office environment's not very good because obviously there aren't as many people in. And I'm like, I know that's because they're working from home, because that's what you all asked to do. I can't have them in both places, you know. So we're trying to kind of, you know, create office environment, especially, I mean, you know, recruitment is different from finance because it's a little bit more about communication and buzz and a bit more of a sales feel to it. But yeah, trying to get that balance right seems to be key for people, and they're really searching for the right kind of role. And actually, we've hired a couple of people that, you know, have been asked to go back to the office full time and actually just don't really want to do that anymore. So I think, you know, those reasons for moving is, you know, if it's not because of redundancy or something that COVID has forced in terms of business need, then it is largely environment. People will always, you know, in terms of our salary guides and what have you, sort of salaries and benefits is usually up there as the top reason, but a very close, much closer second this time was that working from home flexibility, work-life balance, you know, that bit. So other than that, you know, things are as they were in terms of reason for moving, promotions, qualifying, wanting to broaden your role, etc. But, you know, it's just got to all be about the maintaining. I mean, it's turned a bit of a full circle because people want to work from home. But also some people are saying, well, actually, I'm sick of working from home. You know, I loved it at the beginning. It was all I wanted, but now I've had too much of it. And actually, I miss being with people. So, you know, you can't really second guess how people are feeling at the moment. You've really got to ask them and try and sort of navigate your way around it. But trying to keep everybody happy is completely impossible, is my experience personally recently.
A very big balance that I think everybody's going through. I think this is something that actually unites us a bit, because everybody in the nation is having the same balance between having been forced to work at home, now being told to varying degrees you're coming back, or that there's dates where we're planning to come back. And it's a big challenge for all of us, isn't it? And I'd like to think we're all in it together. So let's start sharing our experiences and being a bit more open and honest. I think that's the way we can all improve, but both the organization's employing, but also us as individuals. Let's not grin and bear it any longer. Let's actually, in the nicest way, vocalize any concerns we've got, but actually try and have a constructive conversation that this could be a great way to improve everybody's work life.
It is a real management challenge at the moment, though, you know, because you want to, you know, any experienced manager knows that, you know, managing en masse doesn't really work. Everybody's got different lives, different kind of, you know, dependencies and, you know, things they want to achieve out of work. And, you know, trying to get everybody happy at the same time in terms of an office environment and a respecting of home environment is, you know, it's really difficult. I don't think there is, you know, I mean, you've just got to listen to people, haven't you, and sort of understand what they want and try and get everybody to understand each other's needs as well as the needs of the business, which obviously has to focus as well, has to feature.
A tough one. Let's pick up another comment in the chat box. Something that I know puts off lots of students for applying for roles, and it is very disheartening, a fear of being challenged over a lack of experience. I wonder sometimes whether that's more a thought of, can I use something else to demonstrate some skills, or is it a genuine lack of experience? I think it's something that does put off a lot of candidates. Any tips for beefing up your experience credentials on an application?
It is difficult, and, you know, and I've seen numerous candidates that have worked really hard on their qualifications, and their qualifications have, you know, kind of got further ahead than their experience, and understandably they're disappointed when they can't, you know, that they realise that they've kind of overqualified and they need to catch up on their experience level. It is a difficult one, but as I say, it is a candidate short market at the moment, so opportunities are there. And I think it's the way you present yourself in terms of your transferable skills. And I know when I'm hiring, you know, I don't really focus on what they've done before. I focus on what they can do. And I really hope and, you know, would certainly push for and recommend that clients would hire in the same way. I mean, people have amazing potential. And actually, you can hire somebody who's got it all on paper. But, you know, if you're hiring them on a permanent basis, you're going to have them for many years. And actually, once that first 3 to 6 to 12 months is passed, you know, and you've provided the training and you filled in the gaps, you know, how many more brilliant years are you going to have with somebody that's got aspiration and, you know, agility in the way that they think and the ideas that they have and creativity and, you know, attitude. You know, I would really, was certainly, you know, within our business, we would recommend to our clients that they focus on the people rather than the experience. But clearly in finance, there's a necessity to have a certain level of experience to be able to do the job. And if you haven't got it, then that is difficult. You know, I mean, certainly in terms of the comment in the chat box, you know, I don't think anybody would want you to lie about your experience. But, you know, really thinking before you go to an interview about what your transferable skills are and the achievements that you've had, then you really are, you know, relying on the mindset and the, you know, the kind of interviewer that you've got to be able to see what you're worth and who you are and your future potential. And some interviewers just won't see it, and they're probably not the right place to be anyway. You know, finding somebody that's really going to appreciate you for who you are and what you can do and the skills that you can bring and transfer. You know, how refreshing is that? I mean, we've lost a few people over COVID and have had to hire and sort of downgrade. It's hard to find experienced recruiters, so we're training our own and we're looking for people, you know, and have recruited people that have got really different experience. And it's amazing for our diversity and our sort of team fit internally. You know, our team meetings are amazing. We've got different ideas. We've got people who don't know things, so they believe anything's possible because they haven't been around the block 15 times and thought, well, actually, I've tried that and it didn't work, so I just assume that I'm not going to bother doing it again because it didn't work the first time. These people believe anything's possible and they're prepared to try anything, and it's refreshing and amazing. So, you know, I hope there's other employers out there like us that are prepared to look at people for who they are and what they want to do and can do, as opposed to what they've specifically done before. But clearly, you know, it's different in sales and communication style roles, because there aren't the sort of technical and exam based skills that you know, that you guys need. But I think, you know, the reflection over the last 12 months has made everybody a little bit more zen-like and a little bit more kind of holistic in their approach. And I hope that will, you know, serve well for those that are trying to transfer skills across into different, you know, different styles of work.
Ben, well, I'd just say that for the person that's put that comment there, and I what Catherine says about transferable skills, I think is absolutely right. But I would kind of just go through a process with that person and just say, first of all, what's the role you're applying for? Because it might be that you don't have the experience. And I would say, Ben, if you applied tomorrow for the job as being finance director or chief financial officer of Vodafone, you do not have the experience or the skills to apply for that job. So I would say, yeah, you're being a bit delusional, Ben, in going for that role. I think you probably need another step before you get there. And that's a case where you're looking at roles that you are just not ever going to be able to do with your current skill set. If you look at the job role and say, that's a job I know I can do. I know I could step in and do a job at that level. If it's a purchase ledger clerk or a sales ledger clerk or purchase ledger manager, and you feel you've got the skills, you've got the knowledge to do it, but you don't have maybe the 3 years work experience in a similar environment that they're asking for. What I would do is go to the job spec, and on the job spec, look at the skills they're actually asking for and think, where have I demonstrated that skill elsewhere in my life? And that's what we mean by transferable skills. Whether it is the time that you had to manage shifts at the restaurant that you worked at, where you were managing a team of three people, that's demonstrating your management skills. Yeah, it's not in the environment of finance that you want to work in, but you're showing you've asked for a skill of being able to manage people. I've done that. You've asked to be able to prioritize. How have I shown prioritization elsewhere? And the real challenge then is, how do you communicate that? Now, the thing I love when I ask people to apply for roles is I love a covering letter. I absolutely love it when people take the time to tell me why they are great for that role. And I think that, and again, Catherine's absolutely right. Some interviewers, some recruiters are going to sit there and say, right, if it's not on the CV, I don't want to speak to them. Probably not the people you want to work for. But a great covering letter that comes through the desk, that comes across my desk, that says, I've seen your job. This is why I feel I can excel at this role, because of all of these experiences. It marries up with the job spec. I'm going to interview you because you've taken the time to show me why you have the skills to do the role. So that's what I would look at if you're thinking, well, I don't have the experience that I've asked for. Look a little bit deeper into the job spec. Something that really frustrates me is people just sending me a CV without even any idea of why they want the role. I want to know why you want to work for me. I don't want to know this is your CV. Everyone sends me CVs. Tell me why. And that really impresses me.
I think a scary thought would be maybe if I saw my full job spec, I might not even consider applying for my own job. And I don't know whether you two would be similar, but I think there is this fear that unless I tick everything in the boxes, I'm not going to apply for it. I think it's something that Kelly touched on, Dave, on the ladies' takeover. I think there's evidence that maybe ladies feel more that they are looking at the things on a job spec they haven't done or can't do, as opposed to the other things they can do. And I would encourage people to be more positive. I think when employers put together these specs, they are looking for the perfect candidate. And I'm sorry to say, I don't think those perfect candidates exist, or they are very, very rare. So the fact that there's a couple of bits on there that you haven't done, I would never let that hold you back applying for it and massively upselling the bits that you know you can do and you could excel in.
And I think for some people, it's just that recognition of where they have got a transferable skill, because you might not recognize that you've got skills elsewhere, and everyone has. You know, no one is sitting there and is completely skillless. Everyone can do something. It's got some formability either through school or through, you know, work experience or wherever it is. We have got skills that we can transfer into the workplace.
Cool. Well, as always, it is 7 o'clock now. We always run out of time on the podcast. Catherine, it's been fantastic speaking to you. We will certainly look to get you back, because I know there are other things that you can talk about. Social media is something we've talked about a couple of times on the podcast, and we could look at a particular one there around recruitment and how it helps you look at additional roles or demonstrate your skills. But sadly, we're out of time. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, yeah, you're very welcome. It's been great. Hopefully some useful stuff there. And yeah, but Lee, the last comment to make, really, I guess, as an appetizer for the next thing that we may do together is, you know, is the CV dead? You know, consider your LinkedIn profile, and actually is that going to be the place where people see what you're up to and what you're all about? So, yeah, just have a think about that between now and when I potentially see you all again.
Fantastic. We'll hook up a date and make sure we can definitely get you back.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us live in the audience tonight. Thank you, Dave. I'm going to hand over to you now to do the close down for this episode of the podcast.
Yes, so thanks, Catherine. Thanks to Ben. And thanks to everyone that has chosen to take the time to download the podcast. As always, if you can leave a review or if you can leave us a rating on whichever podcast provider you use, that would be much, much appreciated. It is something that helps us with all of the search algorithms and the charts and things like that. For those of you that are obsessively looking at the podcast charts, we are currently number 5 in our chosen category, which I think is quite remarkable considering we're up against Oxford University and places like that. And as you know, we've got an on-running battle with the Learn to Speak French podcast, which always seems to be just ahead of us. Despite having many, many more subscribers, I don't think they have the committed subscriber base to download and listen every week that we do. So thank you so much for doing that. We will be back next week with a football special, but in the meantime, stay safe and we'll see you soon.